All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, May 30th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. One of the Lineup Lab users who uses the DFSR projections nailed a tournament for $62,000 on Friday. We just found out from our good friends over there. So get on board with a system that allows you to stack like he did, stack, double stack, all the things you need to do to create winning cash and GPP lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started free for 3 days. And then just $29.95 a month after, and you're all good to go. I'm all screwed up with days. The Memorial Day holiday on Monday has really thrown me off for like what day this actually is. So I've already thought it was Tuesday, and then for a second I thought it was Thursday. So if I screw up the day during the podcast, buddy, you'll forgive me, right?
Yeah, I forgive you for sure. Confirmed. I forgive you again off the air when you apologize just incessantly, but. I'll forgive you on the air as well, and I'll forgive you on behalf of all the listeners out there.
We have a double slate of games today, three or four early games, depending on which site you're using. DraftKings has the 3:40 Eastern Time Arizona-Cincinnati game on it. FanDuel does not. They just have the 3 1 o'clock games. But still, we'll touch briefly on this early slate, only because it does seem to check a lot of the boxes that we're looking for when we're looking for, I don't know, not safety, but just like the way I personally, and I think you do too, like to see just slates line up in terms of talent, both pitching and just in some of the bad arms that are going here. But I mean, is there any reason to fade Kluber at all? Definitely not on FanDuel, but like, or I guess I don't even know. Is there a reason to fade Kluber here at all on the early slate, considering like the money line, the matchup, and just his general overall talent level?
No, I don't think so. You know, the early slate is an interesting, it's kind of like a microcosm. It's like got everything you would want from a good big slate, but all just distilled down into a small number of games. And I think, you know, that makes it look like a pretty playable slate to me. One thing it does lack, though, is depth, that starting pitcher one role. So I think Kluber is really head and shoulders above the rest of the options. You know, I think DraftKings gets a little bit more interesting with trying to figure out who you want to pencil in there for that pitcher two spot. You know, we had done some extensive little background work on Alex Reyes to try to figure out what the heck is the deal with him, because he really hasn't pitched a game in the majors in 2 years, has this very weird rehab stint he's been on this year, and you know, missed all of last year, is young in general. So yeah, just trying to wrap our minds around what he really is. Is he more playable than someone like Eduardo Rodriguez? But I think in that number one slot and in FanDuel, you're just going to play Kluber here.
Yeah, Kluber, just as a note on him, I mean, last year he got the Ks up to over 11 and a half Ks per nine. That number has come back down into right around a K per inning this year, which is more in line with his career number. So I think it's looking increasingly like that his strikeout numbers from last year were probably something of an outlier, like, just because I know the previous high for his career was 10.27 Ks per nine. That was 3 years ago, back in 2014. And so the 11.7 looks a little weird. Now, that being said, even though strikeout an inning is still a very good number, so I'm not poo-pooing that. But he's just pitching an insane amount of innings. Like he's averaging more than 7 innings per start. So whatever he's lost, and losses in quotes, in terms of just strikeout upside, he seems to be making it up and just being able to go really deep into games. He doesn't walk anybody. He's walking right around a batter per nine, which is,
yeah,
I mean, that's as low as you'll ever see from anybody. Like there's almost no pitcher in the modern era that is able to sustain this kind of low, like, I don't know, 3% walk rate. Yeah, 3.3% walk rate on the season with a 26.
Well, and pairing it with 1K per inning, right? Because you'll see guys come up and do this, but they're like people who strike out 5 batters an inning because their plan is just to throw the ball over the plate every single time. Yeah, Kluber's great. I mean, going deep into games really matters for DFS purposes, both because you get points for innings and you get points for wins. It's a lot easier to get a win if you're in the game. The fact that he's adding on, you know, his already pretty impressive resume in terms of innings pitched is just a welcome sign. So yeah, easy play. I don't think it's, you know, one even needs to go too deep, I guess, outside of considering playing him for future games as well.
Let's just talk real quick. You mentioned Reyes here at the top. So he comes in, you looked at his strikeout numbers in the minors. They are, I mean, the sample size is small, so it's only like 20-something innings. And yet, even at that few innings, like the 50% K rate or whatever he was rolling up through all three levels is sort of unheard of. And it's building on his career numbers, which he was able to do before he
got. You're talking about this year, right? Like, so in his rehab stint this year, he just went out there and pitched a rehab start at A, high A, double A, and triple A. And in only one of those starts did he strike out fewer than 50% of the batters that he faced. So, yeah, I mean, it's everything you can ask for more. He's also, I think, very importantly, in an era where people are monitoring pitch counts, he went 7 2/3 and 7 innings in his last 2 rehab starts. So it doesn't look like the Cardinals as an organization are going to be handling him with kid gloves. Now, that's not to say you can expect that level of innings pitched for him in the majors right away. One of the issues with Reyes historically has been his command. The walk numbers are actually almost comically high, like 4.5 walks per 9. Still able to depress his xFIP and ERA overall because, again, at every stop along the way, he's striking out 13 guys per 9, 14 guys per 9, 11 guys per 9. It really hasn't mattered where he's been. He has struck out a huge portion of the batters he's faced. So, coming again onto a small slate, Reyes would be a playable or potentially even exciting option on a big slate, and getting him on a small slate here, I think I don't want to call it a no-brainer. I mean, you could probably say someone like Eduardo Rodriguez might have a higher floor than him just because we haven't seen Reyes in a while. But man, on a 4-game slate, it's looking like an easy play to me.
Yeah, he gets a predominantly righty or a very righty heavy Brewers lineup. Just kind of down. Well, I mean, I guess they have Yelich and Shaw, so that's a little. I'm not completely correct there because I forgot they moved Braun down the lineup to the fifth hole. But still, that's the team that strikes out a decent amount. I mean, it's basically between him and Eduardo Rodriguez as the starting pitcher too on DraftKings. Reyes is $900 cheaper. Probably has more K upside. I mean, because it's not like Rodriguez goes super deep in the games in his own right, right? Like, this guy has his own control issues, and he's striking out at 11 per 9, but only pitching, right? He's only getting through like 5.3 innings per start this season. So I think I'd rather just take the quasi risk here on Reyes to say that he, and just think that he's going to just have a higher ceiling in terms of the overall strikeouts. And it does help that he's, I don't know, 12% or whatever cheaper than Rodriguez. Same around a little less money line, but same implied runs coming in on the other side. When we're talking about stacking, I mean, with Kluber's expensive on FanDuel at 11-2, so you're going to have to probably take some hits on the offense. And remember, that 340 game is not on the slate. And then on DraftKings, if we pair him with Reyes or Rodriguez, that does leave you some flexibility with the bats. I mean, are we trying to get as many Indians in this thing as possible? Is that kind of the goal in terms of just overall stacking a team, or do you see another way to go?
No, I think going Indians is the right way. It's almost a shame that you have to play Kluber alongside it because that dips into one of your Cleveland slots. But you have Ronaldo Lopez going on the other side. He's someone we've stacked against this season already. Lopez is kind of an interesting guy, and maybe this provides us with DFS value because his ERA is under 3 this season. Please don't be fooled by that. In the last 100-plus innings he's been in the majors, he's had around a 5.5 xFIP during that time, striking out around 6 guys per 9 while walking more than 3. So he's just a terrible pitcher from top to bottom. He also gives up a lot of fly balls. A 35% ground ball rate means that there's a lot of opportunity to put up real power numbers. And Vegas agrees as well. I mean, the Indians have by far the highest implied total outside. Well, I guess it's close with the Red Sox, but they're a lot cheaper. So, you can get a similar implied total of runs without having to pay up for the big names on the Red Sox. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of Indians for me and probably sprinkling in, Red Sox where I can afford them. But the core of the lineup is going to be Indians for me.
Yep, I'm with you there. And, the Red Sox, both these teams are expensive. So it's not like you're getting either team on the cheaper side of things. I mean, Gaviglio, who the Red Sox face, has had very good numbers this season. Now, that's going to come down. So I don't think he hasn't just turned himself into a 10 strikeout per 9 guy overnight. I don't think so. But all that being said, I definitely want to get as much inverse of Ronaldo Lopez as possible, knowing, though, that these guys are all expensive because the Indians really haven't changed their lineup at all, and they're just one of the better lineups in baseball. Lindor, Brantley, Ramirez, Encarnacion. I like, actually, probably one of the best deals is probably Alonso in the fifth hole. He's really crushed righty pitching over the course of the last 2 seasons. So, and he's the cheapest of the bunch. So I think in terms of value, I probably would want to try to get him just because he just does come a little cheaper than the rest of those guys. On DraftKings, one thing we're going to need to keep an eye on is because this game is not available on FanDuel. Keep an eye on the Arizona batting lineup. They traditionally move things around in ways that make almost no sense to me on a day-to-day basis and then continue to do that. They sat out Goldschmidt yesterday, but they moved Peralta out of the leadoff spot and moved Dyson in there yesterday. Then they moved Marte to second. So this is actually one where it's because the guys are all coming so cheap, their lineup will matter when it comes in today. So by 1 o'clock, that's 2.5 hours before their game time, we should have it in. But that just depending on how they kind of move around the pieces, will kind of matter, I think, for some of the value, especially on DraftKings. All right, before we get to this later slate of games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, I'll talk about FantasyFactor.com. FantasyFactor is a place, great place to go to play the salary cap game formats like you're used to, but without the really insane competition that you're going to face on FanDuel and DraftKings. So you'll head on over there. You can play the regular salary cap game formats. You're going to play the Progressive Home Run Derby contest. One of the things I love about FantasyFactor is they're constantly innovating, adding new little game modes that you can experiment with, and they also have a lot of free rolls to get started on. So yeah, check them out, FantasyFactor.com.
Okay, the evening slate of games has... there's some interesting stuff going on here as well. Yeah, that's why I kind of like the way the day broke in general. I like that they split up some of the pitchers, and then have some of the good offenses going in different spots, because that definitely just kind of fits the bill for this evening slate of games. Now, for the pitching, we have three guys I would call elite arms. Scherzer, Paxton, and Ohtani. Scherzer is coming off a very bad outing against a game against the Marlins where he was... I mean, pretty much a chalk start, and then against just an absolutely horrible offense and just still got kind of blown up. I'm not sure how much that's going to stick in people's memories. I also don't know if he's the play here. But the guy I wrote up was Paxton. Paxton at 9,800 on FanDuel. I mean, what in the actual hell is going on with this price? Like, this price
language alert. People could be listening with their kids.
But yeah. I mean, 9,800 for this guy, his numbers are just like crazy elite, and it's not even like he's... I mean, I guess he's running bad in wins. Like, there's only four wins this year. Maybe that's the thing we talked about with him last time. But, I mean, is there any reason to not play him, especially with a game like Coors? Like, you're getting him at a $2,000 discount off Scherzer in roughly arguably a better matchup in a better park. Like, is there any reason at all to not play Paxton and Cash on this main slate of games?
I mean, the reason would be you just think Scherzer is just simply better, and the raw total number of points that you're going to get out of him is going to be higher and with a higher floor than with Paxton. I mean, I still think Paxton's the play. I don't think it's outrageous to consider Scherzer, but yeah, I mean, there's enough expensive bats that you're going to want to mix in that it's hard for me to imagine that the $4,000 in savings isn't worth it. So there's a case to be made, but nah, it's probably Paxton for me.
Yeah, Paxton's got just elite numbers. So he's striking out, let's see, his K percentage this year is 33%. That's his highest of his career. The walks are up a little bit, but not to an alarming degree. They're right pretty much in line with what he's done in the past. He's basically a 2.5 walk per nine guy. He's just so efficient. Like, 6.75 innings or something like that per start this season. Like, he's had, I think, a couple complete games already. He just is able, he's one of these guys too that he's so efficient. He's had in the past, I don't think this year, but I'm pretty sure in the past, he's had like complete games where he threw less than 100 pitches, where he wasn't even fighting to get those last couple outs, just because he just lives around the strike zone. He's a huge favorite against Texas. Texas is pretty bad, all things considered, against lefties on the season. And Paxton's a -254 favorite. Scherzer is a -215 favorite against Baltimore. I don't know. If the pricing was a little closer, I guess we could have more of a debate about it. The fact that he's $2,000 less on FanDuel, $2,200 less on DraftKings makes things pretty easy. Now, for starting pitcher two, the other elite arm on the slate is Ohtani. Ohtani gets the Tigers, but then there's a possibility we could go a little cheaper here with Stripling. Where do you like going? Either as pit, you know, let's talk about tournament pivots. Like, can we pivot to Ohtani in GPPs and feel reasonably good about the upside? And then also talk to us about starting pitcher two.
Yeah, so I mean, the starting pitcher two slot is definitely a little bit closer in my mind than starting pitcher one. Like, as you pointed out, the difference between these two guys this season, I mean, aside from the $4,000 in price, is two innings, and Scherzer has like 14 more strikeouts or something like that. So, you know, that's just not worth $4,000 extra.
It's $2,000 extra. It's not $4,000.
I have it as 13.9 on Scherzer and 9.8 on Paxton. Is that not correct?
He's 13.9 on DraftKings and he's 11.8 on FanDuel. It's $2,000. It's $2,000 difference on both.
Yep. Got my wires crossed there. Thank you, Doug. Still $2,000. It's still not worth the $2,000 difference, especially when you have quite a lot of room to spend up elsewhere. So, yeah, in terms of the starting pitcher two slot, I can't really decide firmly just by eyeball testing it. Right now, I'll just give the old spoiler that our system prefers Ross Stripling, and I think I understand why. I mean, the guy is still probably a little bit too cheap based on what he's capable of. This is a conversation we had the last time he went out there. Actually, it's been the conversation in each of his last two starts. At Washington, we weren't sure if the matchup was good enough. He went out there, 6 innings, 9 Ks, only 1 earned run allowed. We wanted to play him against San Diego, but we had Musgrove at the mistake price of $4,000. He went out there against San Diego and went 6 2/3 with 10 strikeouts and no runs and no walks. He's now on 3 consecutive starts with no walks and 26 strikeouts. So Stripling to me just seems like full on the real deal. And he's just 7,300, which represents just a $600 price increase. And he's pitching like a guy. I mean, normally don't we have to pay like, I don't know, $8,500, $9,000 for a pitcher of this caliber? And getting him against the Phillies, I get, you hear the hesitation in my voice. It's not that I'm wondering if this is a trick question, but against a team that strikes out the second most in the league against right-handed pitching, it kind of feels like a trick question. Like, am I not just supposed to play Stripling here and not overthink things too much?
Yeah, no, I think he's at 7,300. He's, you know, it's one of these things to look at a guy and like remember the time you paid $4,000 for him 3 games ago or whatever he was when he was mispriced then, and then as the price gets, I don't know, what do we got, like 80% more or something like that, he's still underpriced. Like, this is if these are his true numbers. And they're probably going to come down a little bit. Like, he's going to walk a guy eventually, right? Like, he's probably not going to settle in at a 11 Ks per nine guy. But he doesn't need to be at 7,300. I think that by the time it's done, we see him in that. As long as the pitch count stays there, which it looks like it has been, and I don't think that – I'm not so worried about that even with the Dodgers. I think we end up seeing him settle in as like a $9,000 pitcher over the short term. Like, it could be just one more start and he kind of gets there. We especially need this salary here with the game at Coors too, because we'll talk about that in a second. But with some of the pricing that you have on the bats in Colorado, especially on the Colorado side, I think you as much savings as we can get as possible. I mean, some people might.
Yeah, Paxton Stripling right now in our system lets you play 5 Rockies, which seems pretty good to me. Now, obviously, there's like risk associated with just playing all guys from one team. We've talked about this, like that can occasionally blow up on you, but right now our system is feeling pretty excited about the prospect of just jamming like 5 Rockies and mix and matching from other games and playing Paxton and Stripling.
I do like pivoting to Ohtani in tournaments only because I think he will be the lowest owned of the 3 big money pitchers. I think it'll probably go something like Paxton, Scherzer, then Ohtani, and I think from that point of view you're getting nice, very nice K upside. He's been very good. So you're getting the innings haven't quite been there, like 5 3/4 innings per start, but just mostly because the walks are up over 3. But I think of those, because I think he will be the lowest owned of those 3 guys, and he has arguably as much upside if things, you know, break completely correctly for him. I don't mind pivoting there, but that's really only a GPP pivot. Other guys to maybe possibly take a look at, I mean, Sean Manaea, the strikeout numbers aren't there, but he's been able to work with some control against Tampa Bay. I'd much rather pay $1,000 less on DraftKings for Stripling, so it's not really a tournament thing there. Systems doesn't mind taking a pure punt chance at Jason Vargas. The strikeouts have been there, but a guy can't make it through 5 innings. So, but he's only $4,000. DraftKings has had a lot of these guys lately, these $4,000 pitchers. Like, it was Duffy last night and was very good. Like, you mentioned Musgrove.
Yeah, they're just daring you to do it, right? They're like, listen, and I actually don't mind it too, because otherwise you would never consider playing these guys, right? So I think more decisions is better, and even more like weird lineups and stuff where people go big punts. That's the promise of DFS in general to me, is like, I want to be able to make hard decisions like that. And the fact that we almost never get to in baseball is a real crime to me. Like, just because Corey Kluber's the best pitcher on the slate, I shouldn't just have to play him because of that. And I think that's a flaw in the thing. So yes, I like that there's these cheap guys, and I like that people at least have to consider playing them.
And they've worked out a lot. Like, you know, like I said, like Duffy works out, Musgrove works out, Stripling, like we said, works out. There's been a lot of examples of these just pure punt $4,000 pitchers that have been in good matchups and the price has fallen for whatever reason. Now, Vargas doesn't strike me as exactly like those other guys I just mentioned. I don't know, I take that back, because Duffy had been pretty bad before last night's game. But he's
definitely... Musgrove was just like a total unknown, right? Like, he was coming up, had a track record, but hasn't pitched this year. And Vargas is not that.
I was really hoping we'd see Alex Reyes at that 4,000 when I was updating the system, because I thought that he might fall into that just like kind of mistake pricing. But either way, having one of those cheap starting pitcher 2 guys is going to allow just basically full on stacking Coors. So Coors is going to be, you know, when I was writing the picks last night, I almost had to do that apologetic, like, I know I'm just writing up another Rockies guy here, but they're just so far and away better than any other play on the slate. And that's because Derek Holland makes his way into Coors. Like, if you're looking at a profile of a pitcher that just shouldn't that they maybe should just skip a start when they come into Colorado. Holland does kind of strike me as that guy. Like, he's got a 50% fly ball rate this year. He's probably running good on home runs, all things considered, just because it's just for how many fly balls he gives up. Yeah, his home runs per nine are only about 1.5. But the home run to fly ball rate, I just lost it. Anyway, the home run to fly ball rate, I believe, was lower. Yeah, it's lower than any other point in his career. So this is the game where that kind of just the regression monster probably bites you a little bit in terms of your home run to fly ball. Do you think, you know, you mentioned playing five Rockies. Is that going to be just our MO on the evening slate, just four or five Rockies whenever we get a chance to do it, just because their situation is just so much better than anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, Holland's fly ball rate, bringing that into course, is obviously just no joke. Even in the past, like when Holland has been able to get swings and misses, it's off of his breaking stuff. And the breaking stuff is just notoriously unreliable in Coors anyway. So, yeah, I think Holland is just walking into about the worst possible situation. And he's going to need to spend a lot of time reminding himself that he's being paid $6 million to go through this ordeal this season, I think. Because, I don't see that ending too well. I'm totally ignoring the slight uptick in Ks for him this year. I just don't think there's any fire where that smoke is. I think he regresses back to being the subpar, worse than subpar pitcher we've seen in the past. So yeah, I really like that. The big question is, you know, where do we turn to fill in around that? Because right now our system is liking a few Angels. It likes the Mariners. Both these teams are in pretty good spots. The Mariners have Matt Moore and they have right-handed batters, and that's a great combination, at least this season. Moore has, you know, Moore is in one of these situations where you just wonder how long a team can continue to trot him out there, right? Like, the 8 ERA is really difficult to sustain. That's like a little league level ERA, right? Like, where it's like, hey, we didn't give up a run this inning. That's awesome. It's not that awesome in Major League Baseball to only go one inning out of nine and not give up a run. And the 4.5 walk rate, the 7K rate, giving up, again, a lot of fly balls and home runs. Like, I don't know. It seems like I could find some right-handed Mariners to put a beating on that guy. But our system actually is kind of preferring the Angels against Mike Fiers. Do you have a gut reaction either way on how you would want to fill out the rest of your lineup, whether it be Angels or Mariners today?
Yeah, I wrote up Cruz, like, just to go back to the Mariners, because he's been hampered a little bit with injury this year, and I think that's actually what's causing some of his BABIP issues, is that he's running bad on BABIP, so it looks bad, but also you have to factor in that he's just not moving very well, and that is going to drive your BABIP down, because it's going to be harder for you to just beat out
a single to a...
Exactly, and he's not a huge favorite to do that anyway, but it will take you down in general, so I don't want to make too big of a thing about him running so bad on luck, because I think there are some other circumstances. And that being said, I still think that we are in a great spot with some of his prices. I think you're going to see Heredia move up to the top of the lineup against the righty, or excuse me, against the lefty. Segura is not coming cheap, all things considered, at this point, because he's been spending so much time in the leadoff spot. But they're going to go righties at least through the first four guys, with Segura, Heredia, Haniger, and Cruz. I think all of them are in good spots. Mike Fiers is just as bad. It's like hard to, the Angels are in a
debatable
good spot here. Like, he's,
I don't know. I don't think you can call Mike Fiers just as bad as Matt Moore.
You think so?
He's terrible. I mean, don't get me wrong. He strikes out less than six guys per nine, gives up tons of home runs. The home runs on Fiers definitely suggest greater upside, I would say, in facing him. But man, Matt Moore, he's so bad. The walks alone are, it's like he walks three times as many guys as Mike Fiers.
The good thing about I pretty much agree with you. The Angels maybe are in a better spot here, just because they're across the board a little bit cheaper than some of the Mariners here. Like, Cozart's still coming on the lower side of things. Valbuena's in a good spot because his price gets driven down because he sometimes is out of the lineup, and then he moves up and down the lineup depending on if Otani is in. So like the Angels do shuffle around their lineup a little bit more because Otani will move up near the top, but then obviously the days where he pitches and then days before and after, like, he doesn't. So you do get some, price. This is what keeps for the most part players pricing down when their batting lineup, when either they've been bad, right, or their batting lineup position is just not set in stone, and that's the time where we really want to take advantage. So a guy like Valbuena kind of fits into that category. Like, Cozart's still coming, like I said, 3100 on FanDuel. I think it's going to kind of depend where the run line ends up. I think I'll probably go a few more Angels here than Mariners, and it's going to be close. And they're just both in tremendous spots. And I think that you're going to see those guys actually pretty highly owned, because one, you're going to try to fit as many Coors bats as possible. And then two, I think you are just looking at the two best matchups on the day. Any other place that we can look maybe for a GPP stack, especially if you wanted to? I mean, I guess we mentioned those two teams as good pivots away from Coors, because you don't have to stack Coors. Figuring that this is going to be far and away the highest owned of all the games, is there a place to kind of pivot to that you maybe see as under-owned that could have some nice upside in the late slate?
Sure. I mean, so say you pay up for like Max Scherzer, right? Like, and I think this might be a time to have like a little bit of a, you know, sit around the fire and take some instruction on playing GPPs, because this is something I think, you know, a lot of our users struggle with, how to really think through the process of building a plausible GPP lineup. And this comes with telling a story, right? So you have to be able to tell yourself a story of what factors could happen where all of a sudden I find myself with the best overall lineup on the day. So the first thing I would look at is, is there a very obvious chalk pitcher? And tonight for me, that's Paxton, right? So if you think most people are going to play Paxton, then I want to look and see, is there equal upside to be had in other pitchers? And the answer tonight is unequivocally yes for me. I mean, you could stack Scherzer and Stripling. You could stack, you know, Ohtani and Scherzer. You know, there's a number of different directions you could go. Particularly, I like Scherzer and Ohtani together, because that actually makes it so you can't tempt yourself into playing the Coors bats, because the Coors bats in a big tournament are always going to be overrepresented. There are definitely nights where, first of all, the Coors game isn't the highest scoring game. And second of all, you just don't pick the right guys who score all the runs from the Coors game, right? So I think you can go like two expensive pitchers, fade the Coors game, and all of a sudden find yourself with one of these other stacks that also have very, very good matchups, but aren't going to be nearly quite so obvious, right? So who are some examples here? You could grab the Braves going against Jason Vargas. I mean, we talked about Vargas being a potential high upside guy. The guy also has a 10-6 ERA through four starts this season, right? So, like, there's definitely a chance he gives up some runs against one of the league's best offenses. Another direction that you could peek in is someone called Brad Keller is pitching tonight for the Royals. You may not have heard of him, and I would forgive you for that, because I also hadn't heard of him. He is a converted reliever who has been terrible out of the bullpen this year. This is like one of the things that I'll never understand, how major league teams can look and they're like, yeah, he's pitched 22 innings and with a 2 ERA. Let's give this guy a chance at starting. He's had a 5K per nine out of the bullpen. It's impossible. Like, the guys, like, you just get a free strikeout just because they don't recognize you when you go up there when you come out of the bullpen. And the fact that he's managed just 5Ks per nine going in against the Twins, that seems like an excellent spot to me. And there's a lot of these little spots tonight. Like, you just definitely, in big tournaments tonight, you definitely do not have to be on the chalk. You got David Hess pitching tonight. Haven't even mentioned his name tonight.
Yo, let's stop there real quick.
We just go up and down the line.
I want to say something.
I'm getting excited, Doug. When I get excited, you get me on a roll. I'm just going to keep going and going.
So while you're talking, I just used our system to kind of go through some of the filters that you had just put on about possibly just getting away from some of the chalk plays. And one of those ways was to
like exclude the Coors game.
Was to exclude the Coors game, and then to fire up Scherzer and Ohtani together. And one place that you can get some guys in, like, some of the mid-tier pricing, because their prices are down a little bit because of that Coors game. Like, you know, they need to smooth out the salaries across the board. If everyone's just expensive, it would just get too hard. So, like, other players' prices do come down a little bit when you have that game in Coors. And that Washington team is one of the teams that shows up as a potential stack. Now, again, I limited the Angels as well, because we had already talked about them, but basically I'm looking for, like, what's the next team up? Like, according to our system, the next team up for sure here is definitely the Nationals, because I didn't know you were getting into it, but Hess can't strike anybody out. XFIP. He's just another Orioles pitcher, basically. He looked at all of his brothers in arms around the Orioles and just said, oh, this is kind of the expectation. Like, this is what happens when you just have no one to really, no light post to kind of like lean against in terms of what you're supposed to be as a major league pitcher.
So you think that's it? You think it's the Orioles are just like a bad influence on him? He's like, well, Chris doesn't strike anybody out. Why do I have to strike anybody out?
Dylan didn't even make it through an inning in one of those starts. They just left like 8 runs before he recorded an out. Like, so yeah, I just like to look at where I do like to like do the X game here. When I say X, like just starting to remove things, because I want to see where it lands, because, you know, most instances, people model baseball very similarly, right? Like, we're going to land on guys in Coors. It's going to be almost impossible for you to have a system that does not have Coors as your highest overall raw points, right? And the Angels right behind them just because of some of the run lines and other things. But I want to see what sort of those next teams are up, because every team you eliminate, my assumption is that the overall ownership percentage on the team gets lower and lower. And I think that's probably where we land with guys like Rendon, Turner, Harper, Juan Soto still coming pretty cheap on DraftKings. So all this being said, yes, I'm very into a national stack. as a GPP stack, knowing that it'll probably be, you know, 10% or lower owned almost across the board on these guys.
Exactly, because I think you pointed to an important aspect of where the value lies in DFS baseball these days, because, yeah, people are modeling in pretty similar ways, and that's going to yield pretty similar conclusions, especially for cash games. And for cash games, you don't really want to stick your neck out by and large. But when you start to get into these GPP things, like these lineups, when you, like I just ran the same thing you did, excluding the Angels and the Coors game, like, you're telling me I can get Scherzer and Stripling with like a Minnesota Seattle stacks? That sounds great. Like, there's a ton of upside in a stack like that. I'm still going to basically be going against Matt Moore and David Hess and have two great pitchers in good matchups with huge K upside. Like, you can make some really, really, really good GPP lineups that are only a hair under the expectation, just the raw points expectation of the chalk lines tonight. But since it is pretty obvious what the chalk should be, those guys will still be way higher than they needed to be for big tournaments. So yeah, I think it's an exciting night for big tournaments. I mean, obviously you're going to have a lot of variance. You're still going to be going against probably games with a lot of upside. Another thing you can do too, by the way, is just, you don't have to X those games entirely. You can pick a guy. You can pick Nolan Arenado or something. Like, I don't know. There's a, yeah, tell yourself the story. What needs to happen tonight at the end of the night? Because you've complained about it before, right? Like, you've said, hey, I didn't win the GPP because this is what happened. Yeah, Paxton wasn't quite as good as he needed to be, or this guy randomly had Ross Stripling, even though that was a bad play. You know, whatever story you tell your friends, and then just try to be the guy who puts himself in position to get lucky that way. You're not going to win the GPP tonight by running our optimal lineup number one. That's one. I will stick my neck out and say that. So be creative. Have fun with it. It's late May. We got a lot of season left. So figure out some way to enjoy this thing, you know?
All right. On that note, let's get out of here. DFSR.com/MLB. We'll give you a chance to use some of those tools that we're talking about for stacking, double stacking, locking in players, limiting players. Oh, excuse me. Limiting is not coming with our next dev release, which should be in the next couple days, because I just got off the phone with our dev guys, and that is getting very close. So that'll be there. And hopefully our new set of projections as well, that's going to do some upside and floor stuff as well. Should only be, I want to say, a week away, possibly less. So go and check that out.
A week away, TM. With the trademark sign.
DMSR.com/MLB. We'll get you started, buddy. Back again Friday talking more baseball. Enjoy your Wednesday.
Peace.